primary purpose of each AA group is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. To pursue this work, Valley Group field agents search the western states for the finest recovery speakers to come and share their message of experience, strength, and hope with us. Each week, a single speaker is chosen from the many for their service to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And now, Valley Group World Headquarters is proud to announce the winner of the Outstanding Speaker of the Week. The nominee for this category has the sobriety date of 4/16/12. She has been continually in service to the Fellowship as a chairperson of meetings and a sponsor. Her AA motto is the Bedevilments. May I have the envelope, please? The winner of the Outstanding Speaker of the Week is Danielle R. from Visalia.
Hi, my name is Danielle. I'm an alcoholic. A very nervous one. I started drinking when my mom died, which wasn't that long ago. And, you know, alcohol was a great solution for me. It fixed all my problems at the time. I didn't feel any pain. Life was great. I got out of bed, did what I wanted. I had no job, so I had no responsibilities. You know, alcohol just fit into my life perfectly at the time. And it worked great. I wasn't, not one time did I think that I had a problem or that it was something deeper. Not at all. I thought I had a legitimate reason to be drinking. My mom had just died and everything was great. Everybody else in my family was acting like nothing had happened. So it was working out great for me. And before I knew it, slowly things were gone. My kids, my family's respect, my house, a place to live, everything, and I didn't care at all. I did not care at all. I thought I had every right to feel the way I felt and every right to walk away from my family because I took care of everybody and look what happened anyways. So I turned my back on everybody and I had no problem with it at all. I had no conscience. I just felt whatever. I was more worried about myself and fixing what problems that I wanted to do. I wanted to have fun. I wanted to do what I wanted. And I didn't care whose life I affected when I did that. And, you know, I had a blast. I thought I had a blast. I lived in the delusion that everything was fine, that my kids were better off without me in their life because I was such a mess. How could I raise kids when I didn't have a mom to help me? I didn't have a role model anymore to show me what to do. So I drank it away. I drank away the hurt. I numbed everything. I numbed my kids sitting there crying, mom, come home. My dad begging me that he needed help. I numbed it all. I didn't care. I just didn't care. I didn't care how bad I was hurting my dad when I called him begging him for money, how bad I was hurting anybody in my family. And I lived a life all focused around me and what I was doing and what was most important to me, not being concerned with anybody. And at some point in that lifestyle I was living, I found myself one day calling people to come over to get drunk with, whatever, you know. And I had this moment where I'm sitting there thinking, wait a minute, I don't even like these people. Like, we don't get along. I hate them. But I knew they had alcohol. I knew they had money. They had something I wanted. And that's all that mattered. I didn't get along with them. Hated them. Hated people they hung out with. But that wasn't what was important. What was important is that what I needed was fulfilled. That's all that mattered. I didn't care if we didn't like each other. Whatever. That didn't matter to me. And at that point, I felt about as low as I could get. But don't think I didn't make those phone calls anyways. I sure did. I was on that phone anyways, like, oh, whatever, you know, it's just the lifestyle. And at some point, I called my dad, and I was just like, this is ridiculous. I want to come home. And I lived in this little bubble where I thought, I left home and it was my choice. I chose to drink. I chose to do what I wanted. And anytime I wanted to go back home, I could call my dad and go home. Whatever. He'll be there. He needs my help. His life needs my help, you know. And that phone call where he was like, no, it's not happening. You're not coming home. And I was like, what? Like, what are you doing? But you know who this is, right? And he's like, you're not bringing that to my house. You're not bringing yourself to my house. You're not bringing your drama to my house. And I was like, well, I don't even know what you're talking about. I'm great. And I was lost. I was stuck and I was lost. And I knew that no matter what I did, I was going to keep this routine going. This just sickening routine that I love. I used to love that routine. Like, I left home to do what I wanted to do. And at some point, without me knowing, it totally turned into a nightmare. And my way out was turning myself in. I had a warrant, so I turned myself in. And, you know, I thought, well, that'll show my dad that I'm making a change. I'll turn myself in and get rid of that. And, you know, I call him from jail, and he's like, oh, hey, by the way, when you went to jail, we moved. You don't know where we live anymore. And I was like, wait, what? What do you have my kid? You can't do that. And he's like, yes, I can. You know, while you were drunk in a stupor, you signed over your rights to her. And I'm like, no, I didn't. And I did. I remember that. I was in denial, like, in this delusion that I could just come back and take those papers back and everything would be fine. And that's just not how it turned out to be. You know, and I stayed in jail for a little bit, not too long, you know, and talked to my dad off and on, and he said, you get in the program and you can come home, but there's going to be rules. You know, you don't talk to anybody, and by the way, you're not going to know where I live until you're already out of jail. And I'm like, wait, what does that even mean? Like, what are you talking about? And he's, I don't trust you. You've done too much. I don't trust you. And here, I mean, my little bubble was just shattered because I'm thinking, like, what are you even talking about? I'm the greatest daughter ever. Like, you should be so happy that I'm going to be back in your life. Like, you guys complain all the time. You want me to get sober and, hello, I'm here, let me back in. And he was just, no, too many times the same shit over and over and over again. And he was just, and he was just beside himself, and I couldn't believe it. I'm like, you're really not going to tell me where you live? And no, I mean, I got out of jail, and I'm like, I don't even know where to go. Like, I'm just, I don't know. And I call him, and I'm like, can you come pick me up or something? And he's like, no, it's late, your daughter's in bed. Sorry. But I just got out of jail. Here I am, me again, inconsiderate. I just got out of jail. I'm doing what you want me to do. Now drop your life and come save me. You know, and so I had to call somebody else to come pick me up. And I went home, saw my daughter again, and it was so not like I expected it to be. I expected, like, balloons and a party and, yay, you're home. And that just was absolutely not the case. My daughter was kind of like, okay, well, are you still going to be here the next morning? And that was what she experienced so many times, like, snuck out in the middle of the night, gone. And she was used to it. This 9-year-old used to me just, whatever, like, Mom, don't make plans because you're not even going to be there. And as heartbreaking as that was, I was pissed. I was mad because I felt like, I'm here. Like, this is what you guys wanted. I'm here. I've arrived. Everybody should be so happy. And And I figured people were going to be walking on eggshells because they didn't want me to relapse or they didn't want to push it and all that. And they weren't at all. They were just like, you got a lot of crap to make up for. And I was like, that's not how this is supposed to go. Like, I was so disappointed and just like, everybody's supposed to be so happy and crying and let's go do this and let's go do that together. And they were like, I don't really know if we want you back at our house yet. And I was just, you know, my world was shattered. And I got out on recovery court, and I thought it was a joke. I really did. I thought it was just a complete joke. And I was under this, I for myself felt like, I'm good. I moved out of Tulare, so I'm good now. I moved away from those people. I moved to a new house. Don't have none of their phone numbers. They don't have my phone number. I'm good. Like, the alcohol and whatever is out of the picture, so everything's going to be just peachy. And that was not it at all. Like, I was so angry. I didn't have a sponsor. I was going to meetings because I was required by the courts to go, not because I wanted to be there. No, I thought every single person was lying. They were stupid. They didn't have a life like I had. They were just full of crap, and they were probably going and getting loaded as soon as they left. And I didn't believe anybody at all. I thought every meeting I went to, every group I had to participate in was just ridiculous. I didn't have a sponsor. I had a book for show, I guess, because I think Recovery Court made me or something. And didn't read it. Didn't do steps. I thought the steps were just like not even, there's too many God in the steps. And it wasn't going to happen, because my experience was, I knew God. We hated each other equally. That's how I felt. Because my mom was religious and she died. So why am I going to live this boring religious life and be dead anyways? You know, I felt like the way he handled the things that have happened in my life and the people around me's life was crap, and I could do a much better job. So the steps just had too much God, and I didn't want nothing to do with it because he just wasn't going to do nothing like I was going to do it. And so I was going to do this program. I was going to prove everybody wrong, and I was going to do it my way, and I was good. Well, 3 months into being sober, I told my dad and my daughter, I'm going to go to a meeting, right? I'm like, yeah, okay, bye. And my dad's like, yay, good job, meeting. You know, did you think for a second, wait, she never goes to meetings on this day? No, I was headed to the liquor store. Let me tell you, I was going to be gone. I had no concept of the consequences. I was going to lose my kids, go back to jail, which I started this stupid program to get out of jail in the first place. None of those things popped into my head, not once. And I drove around for a minute. I went to the Lana Club. I was like, I could just go to Four Seasons right here real quick. I mean, I had my dad's truck, and I already knew as soon as I drank, I was done. It was done. I was gone. My dad's truck was going to be gone. I mean, it was going to be a mess. I did not think about any of those consequences, not a single one of them. And I like to say that God led me to Bridge Street, which is where, at the time I was going to the noon meeting, which I hated every single person at that meeting. Let me tell you, any person that was in recovery at all, I hated you. You were lying. You had no idea what I was going through. And I went to this meeting, and I came at the very end, sat in the back, and I'm just like, what is this place talking about right now? Like, I have no clue what any of these people are talking about. And they're actually reading out of that stupid blue book? Who even does that? I don't even know who does that. And so I listened, you know, and I had seen somebody in that meeting that I knew from the noon meeting, and I had talked to him a little bit, and I was like, dude, I was getting ready to go get drunk right now, you know, not worrying about anything at all. My kids, you know, my daughter, again, finally trusting me that I was going to actually come home this time. Was I worried that, no, she was going to be like, oh, great, there's mom again? Not at all. Not worried one bit. Did I think to pull out a phone list and call anybody? Nope, because I didn't have nobody's number. Because you guys were all lying. Every single one of you didn't care nothing about what you had to say. Your story is nothing. So then somebody came out and talked to me. And she didn't ask me, how long have you been sober? How are you doing? What's going on with you? None of that. Not one of those things. She asked me two questions. She asked me if when I start drinking, or if I wanted to stop and I found I couldn't, and I was like, sure, I guess, whatever. You know, and if once I put alcohol in my system, do I lose control? And I was like, whatever you say, dude. Like, I don't know, you guys were talking some different stuff in that meeting, so I'll just say whatever. And I didn't know until I got into this book how true those two questions really were in my life. Because I never stopped to look at it because I didn't have a problem. Everybody else had a problem. The cops had a problem with my drinking and what I was doing. I didn't have a problem with it. I was great. You know, my family didn't understand. Like, my dad should understand me. He used to get drunk all the time. What's going on? The difference that he puts it down and goes to work, you know, or he could dump out half a beer. And I'm like, you're crazy. Why are you going to bed with beer still in the refrigerator? I don't understand. Like, that's, I don't even, what are you even doing? Like, and you know, I got into looking at my craving, and that is how many times whenever I had already left home and I had been given chances to go to family functions, and I've been like, yeah, I'm going to do it this time. I'm going to do it. I'm not going to embarrass nobody. I'm not going to get kicked out for once. And I'm taking a couple of drinks while I'm getting ready, taking a couple of drinks as my dad's picking me up, then chugging a little bit on the way there, you know, without him thinking, what are you doing? You know, and then an hour later, my family being like, get out of here. Like, seriously? What are you doing? And I'm like, I'm good this time. I got it under control. My dad and my little crazy daughter looking at me like, have you lost your mind? And I'm like, I don't even know what's going on. I'm doing good. I'm behaving this time. You know, and that, so many times that's happened. I've set a limit to so many things. Or had a plan. Oh, I had so many plans on how this night was going to go with my family, or this night was going to go this way and that and whatever, and I was going to control it this time. I had it all under control. As long as I took this person out of the equation or this person out of the equation and they didn't provoke me, I'd be okay. If my brother's not there, I'll be all right. He won't provoke me. I'll have it all under control. How many times was my brother not there and still I'm being asked to leave? You know, so, at some point I had to look at the common denominator, you know, and it wasn't my family, it wasn't the cops, you know, as much as I wanted it to be, it just, that wasn't the case at all. And my obsession comes in whenever I spent those 3 months thinking, I got this, I got it all under control. I cannot drink like my dad does, you know, I can drink like my dad does, or I can stay sober like my dad does. I could stay sober without doing this work. I could pull off recovery court without doing this. And the truth was that those 3 months, I couldn't imagine doing 9 more months in recovery court. There's no way. Not like that. There's no way. I was just hating everybody. And the thing is, I got everything back. I got my kids back. I got a place to stay. I got trust back. I got a car. I got responsibilities back. And still I'm sitting there like, screw all of you. I hate you all. Like, you know, just everybody sucks. My dad sucks. My kid sucks. She wants to go play. And I'm like, what are you so happy about? Wait till you grow up. Life's going to suck. You know, and she's like, what is going on right now? Like, what happened? You know, and it's that I got off that grace period, you know, and life hit. And I was angry, you know, about everything. And once I got clear on my obsession and my craving and knowing that I had a problem and that taking the alcohol and whatever out of the situation was not the answer, because it was gone. It was out of my situation, and still I felt worse than I did when I was screwed up, because here's all this stuff that I used to be able to numb, and I have no numbing agent anymore. I'm just sitting here like, I hate all of you. Like, my dad, he would come home and start talking to me, and I'm like, why are you even talking to me? Do you not see my face? I don't want to talk to you. And he's just like, you're weird, you know? He's like, I don't even understand what happened to you. Like, I don't get it. This stuff is not working. And I'm like, that's what I'm saying. This crap isn't working, you know? And God saved me going to that meeting. I would not, There's no way I would be here today not getting into this book and these steps. And my bedevilment, So that's where I got the most eye-opening experience I've ever had in my life, because that showed me to look at my personal relationships. And those were a mess. That's where I was having most of my problems, because I had these kids and these kids' dads. Ugh. I hated all of them. You know, my son, I hadn't seen in a year and a half. Talked to him, nothing. I'd been blocked off of anything that I could even resemble, a picture, Facebook, anything, just totally blocked. You know, and I hated this dude. I absolutely hated him. And getting into this work and showing a different side of me, miraculously, I get a text message from this guy, and he's like, look, we need to talk, and then we'll see about you talking to your son. And I'm sitting here like, I'm sober. Like, what the hell? I should get my son back. Like, I don't even know what you're talking about. This is stupid. You know, and that's where my inconsideration came into play, because not only had I screwed up my life, but I had screwed up everybody's life who was in contact with me. My son's dad, even though I wasn't with him, I screwed his life up, and I screwed his relationship, and it went on and on. How many times did I say I'd be there for my son? Never there. How many times did he try to talk to me nicely, and I just blew up? Because he wasn't giving me the answers I needed and I wanted and I felt like I deserved. You know, so I'm sober, woo, yay, now give me my son. And he's like, no, I don't think so. You know, and I had, this program taught me how to take a breath, understand where he's coming from, take my ego out of the situation, because I'm like, you wouldn't even have that kid if it wasn't for me. I made him. Like, I'm the one that suffered with him, you know, and now you just think you get all the good parts when he's already out and stuff. And that was frustrating, you know, because my family has their views on mine and his relationship, but it's not about their views and how they feel about it, because there's a lot of things between me and him they don't know about, and I have to be considerate of him and the fact that he's looking out for my son when I wasn't there to look out for him. I wasn't there. I was like, whatever, go away, just whatever. It was convenient when I called my son once a week, once a month, whatever, whenever I guess I felt a little guilty or whatever, or saw somebody else with their kids, and I was like, oh, yeah, I got one of those too. Yeah, maybe I should try to call, you know. And through this program and the miracles that this program brought, I get to see my son every week. And that in itself is such a miracle you don't even know. Like, I'm trusted with my son. I could take him wherever I want, do whatever, you know, and I don't get the whole him driving by the house to see where we are, what we're doing, if my car's there, you know. And we are working on co-parenting, kind of, and how angry I wanted to be at his girlfriend, because how dare you call my son your son? Who cares if you raised him? I don't care. I don't care. I'm sober now, give him back. I don't care what you did for him, I don't care. And that's where consideration for other people, you know, hard on ourselves and considerate of other people comes into play, because I have to remember all the crap that I did to him, and that's where it becomes hard for me. You know, remembering the things that, the times I wasn't there and she was. And, you know, anybody who may know me or knows my relationship with my son's dad, which a few of you do, I hate that dude. I hated that dude. I hated everything he was about, everybody in his family. And now I can sit here and I can say I'm grateful. I'm grateful to him. I'm grateful to his girlfriend that she gave him a positive role. She gave him a positive role model. She gave him stability when I couldn't. I wasn't. I didn't care to. I had no, didn't care, didn't want to, whatever. You know, and that's where my relationship with God comes into play, and humbling myself and being considerate and all of those things that just weren't important to me before. They weren't important. I didn't care. The world revolved around me. And if you got in my way, you were done. Like, I could discard you like nothing. You know what I mean? And not care if I hurt you or whatever, because I expected you to be back there whenever I wanted you back. You know, that's the hope that this program has brought to me. And it's not, I didn't get see things back by bragging or boasting about, I'm sober now, I do this, I do that, because my son's dad could not care less, doesn't care, doesn't believe in AA. He has seen a change in me. He's seen a change in the way he could say the meanest things to me, and I'm like, you know, some of that's right, but I don't know, I think you're still maybe a little angry about other things, let's just talk about it later. Where before, I'd be saying everything you could imagine to that dude. And, you know, that's just not the case now because I have to have a relationship with him. And at some point, you know, I have to walk up to him and I have to face him and admit my wrongs because, let me tell you, I had a lot of wrongs in that relationship. And as much as I want to say he did it all, it was all him. He was a jerk. He should have stuck by me. That was the role I assigned him, is to be there whenever I needed him to. And that, you know, I lived by that. I got my family to believe that. Let me tell you, that's why my family hates him. Because all the stuff that I told them to think about him, none of it, you know, none of it's legit, none of it's true. And those are amends that I have to go back and make, not only to him, but I have to be considerate of the relationship he's in also, because I can't just call him and be like, hey, we need to talk. Just tell me when your lunch break is so we can chat. Because I'm not going to do that to his relationship with his girlfriend, because I already know him, and he'll be like, oh, we just won't tell her about that. But that's not the case, you know, because I could possibly have some amends to make to her, too, you know, because I left her with quite the burden, and I've caused a lot of turmoil in their family and in their life whenever it was convenient for me. Not whenever I wanted to do what was right for my son, or when I felt like I was good enough to be back in. No, I just wanted to cause havoc in whoever and everybody's life. You know, these people are doing perfectly fine. Let me just screw with them a little bit because I feel like crap. You know, and that, those are things that I would have never, ever, ever admitted to. I would have never, ever in my life, you know, and there's relationships that I have caused a lot of problems with my family, with, you know, with my family and him that need fixing, you know, that need help. But I cannot do that. I cannot do that on my own. There's no way, because God knows when I try to throw myself in it, let me tell you what kind of wreckage that caused. But you know, the thing about this program is that I know for myself is it doesn't matter how much time I had, if it was the first 3 months, if it was 5 years, when I wasn't doing this program, when I wasn't doing the steps, and when I wasn't getting in a close contact, because I need a close contact with God, you know, my life sucked. And I made sure everybody else's life that was close to me sucked too. I was controlling my daughter's every move. From I would lay out an outfit for her to wear and then switch it up in the morning. And she's like, I don't even understand what's going on. You know, and I just caused so much wreckage in everybody's life, and I was sober. And I'm like, I don't understand, this program doesn't work. And that was my first fall. That was my first crutch. This program doesn't even work. Look, it's stupid. Although I wasn't doing the program, I was still going to blame it all on AA. It don't work. Just like I blamed everything bad on God before, I was going to blame everything bad now on AA because it don't work. You know, and I needed an excuse to just whatever, to make me feel better. And getting into this program was not comfortable by any means. It's been the hardest things I've had to face, the most uncomfortable things I've had to face. But I'm beyond grateful to my sponsor who never gives me crap, never sugarcoats anything for me, you know, and that was very important. I'm just so grateful that I have a sponsor that me and her can connect, you know, not only that, but our kids are friends. And the two people I work with, I guess, you could say, they don't sugarcoat anything. If I'm a little off on something, let me tell you, they'll be the first to let you know. I have many times left their house like, you know what, dude, I don't even care what these people say. They're so full of crap. You know, but then really, the whole drive home, I'm just like, oh, man, I guess they were kind of right a little bit. But I just don't really want to talk about that. You know, and going through my fourth step as completely, I guess, demeaning as I felt like that was, I learned so much. And not only, I mean, I learned things as I was writing it. I learned things as I was trying to lie when I was writing it. I learned things when I went and talked to my sponsor about it, because she's like, really? I don't think so. Let's talk about this a little bit, because I just don't know. You know, and parts of my inventory, like the most important parts of my inventory, I left blank. Like, I didn't harm them at all. Not at all. None. Nope. They screwed me over, so they deserved it. It's you know, equaled out. You know, and she's like, wait, no. I mean, I think we went over my fifth step for like 2 or 3 weeks because every harm was empty. I was like, no, I'm good. They're good. We're good. We're all good. They're not bothered at all. And she's just like, she's really? And I'm like, I was an angel in that relationship. I was good. Like, they messed me up. You know, and that just, in all honesty, that wasn't the truth at all. From the get-go, from the first glance at these people I was manipulating, I already had it in my head going before I even knew what I was doing. I was manipulating. I was sizing them up. You know, what can I get from them? And every relationship is, no matter what I wanted to do, friendship, relationship, whatever, no matter how much I wanted to look at it like they hurt me first, or we hurt each other, so we're good. In all honesty, you know, I went into that relationship or friendship or however you want to look at it with expectations of how they were going to treat me. Not so much expectations as, like, facts. They were going to treat me this way, and that's just how it was going to go, you know. And of a lot of those relationships and friendships and whatever, as much as I would really like to act like they never happened. That keeps me sick. That keeps me bonded up. That keeps me from going to certain towns, you know, and it's ridiculous because I want that freedom that the book talks about. I want to be able to go anywhere, you know. I want to be able to drive through Tulare, not just, like, be on my phone trying to find the quickest route from my house to pick up my son so I don't have to go nowhere I used to go. And, you know, it's just ridiculous, and it's not... It's not the other people that so much bother me. It's, I guess at this point, it's the shame that I know my role in these people's lives. And as much as I would like to act like they don't exist, they still do. And they keep me sick. They keep me stuck where I'm at, which is my amends. And it's great how God works in my life right now, because I've been putting off my amends, and it's like, I'll watch a random show that has nothing to do with anything connected to AA, and bam, an alcoholic will show up in the show talking about they have to make their amends. And I'm like, really? Is this happening right now? I'm like, what is that? I don't even know okay. I'm just like, all right. Already, you know, and 2 episodes later, they'll be like going back and reviewing how they made their amends. And I'm like, this is a doctor show. Why are they talking about amends? You know, and it's just like, I don't even understand what's going on. And that's, you know, that's God telling me, stop being stagnant. Stop sitting there, you know, stop. Because he will come in every aspect of my life. I'm trying to relax and watch TV, and bam, I'm like, I guess I could be making an amends right now, you know, so it's amazing, you know, and today I have consideration for people. It's not a walk in the park by any means, because I still have my moments, but I know them, I know my moments now, and I know I can take a step back, and I know I can pray, and I know I have different ways to handle it than flipping out and pushing people away, because that's what I was good at. Because if things were getting too much, I'll just push you away, I'll just do something and push you away, then I don't got to deal with you no more. You know, because that was way easier to just not even deal with it, no matter how important it was, my kids, my dad, whatever, I'll just do something bad and push you away. I'll deal with you when I'm ready to deal with you. And today I still have those problems sometimes, but I'm more considerate of people, of the things that they're doing in their lives. And the most important thing that I have to remember for me about this program and about my experience is that I cannot push it on people. Because trust me, my brother's a hot mess, and I would just love to shake him and be like, look, you could get everything back. Your life could be so much better. And it's just, that's not, I know my brother, and it's not going to work. You know, that's just, he will hate me. He hates me now. He hates me whenever. You know, I don't shove the book down his throat. I don't bring the book to his attention at all. I go over there and I try to be there as much as I can be there. You know, for him, for his girlfriend. He doesn't so much want me around him, but for his girlfriend, for whatever, you know. And it's heartbreaking, you know, because she's not an alcoholic. And it's so frustrating for her because she knew me before, she knows me now, and she sees the possibility that that could work for my brother too. And it's frustrating for me. But it's just not his time. I don't know if it'll ever be his time. It's not his time, but all I can do is lead by example. You know, that's all I can do. I can't shove in his face. Well, look, I got my kids back. You can get yours back, too. Because I wish somebody would have told me that whenever I was still using. That would have been great. Let's talk about a fight busting out real quick. You know, it just wasn't, he's not ready for it. And all I can do is show him that there is a way. That's all I can do. You know, and it gets difficult and it gets frustrating. But God, if I wouldn't have ever gone through all those uncomfortable times and all those irritating times, I've learned so much by dealing with my problems instead of sweeping them under the rug or pushing them away. I've learned how to be a person and a human and a daughter, a mom, you know, maybe not the best at sometimes, but I'm working on it, you know, and with God's help, I could, me and my daughter can talk. You know, we could talk before, no, not really, ever, you know, and me and my dad talked, and it's not just about how much money can you give me this week, or can I use your car, or whatever, you know, it's life things, how I'm doing in AA, whatever, how he's doing, how work's going, so this program has given me a lot of hope, and it's given me my life back, but I have to stay moving forward. I can't stay stagnant like I am right now. I have to keep that excitement to keep seeking God and to keep asking him to help me because I don't have it figured out even when things are going great. It's not me. It's definitely not me doing it. You know, so it's just very, very important for me to remember where I came from and where I can still go. So that's all.